Ed Leedskalden even had a health chair. We're going to talk about that too, and much more on Coast to Coast AM. Joe's website, waitingforagnes.com, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. How did he get the money, Joe, besides just his living expenses, to buy the land and the materials and things like that?
Well, now, remember, the land that he actually bought, George, I think the original site was like 10 acres there, and I think he paid $12 for it. The site now only has, like, I think an acre or two because, of course, over the years it was auctioned off, and, you know, the castle only encompasses a smaller area there. So, like I said, $12. Yeah, and remember, George, in these days, or in those days, I should say, a dime went a long way. I mean, you know, you could buy bread, you could, you know, you could go to the movie theater, you could have popcorn, you could, the dime just went a long way, and even later on when he was doing it, a quarter was a long way. And as I said, and I can't find any information on this, but they said that they thought they believed that he had some stock in some city utilities there somehow. That information is vague, and that he had a little monthly income from that. But as far as the cash goes, like I said, the only thing that I can determine is that his costs were very minimal. Back in those days, there were no taxes. Remember, he had his own water, the electricity that he needed. He actually he provided that for himself. So really, and a lot of people helped Ed out, you know, like ladies would bake him pies or take him food. And, you know, so a lot of the people there helped him. But as far as the actual cash goes, I've just got to think that, you know, over those periods of time, he actually saved it from the utility company that he received stocks from, and he was very miserly. All his utilities, all his tools, you know, he made handmade everything. He actually bought nothing.
Might he have had an inheritance?
Well, no. When he came here, he told the Mosers, he said, "I'm flat broke. I have nothing." He started out with nothing. Now, I have learned later on that, you know, I was thinking when I was first researching the story that he lost total contact with his family, but there's stories now that he did write back and forth to them. But as far as I know, they never sent him a dime.
All right. All right. Let's talk a little bit about this health chair. Tell us.
The health chair is something a lady emailed me after the last show, the show that we did before in March of 2004, and she said, as a little girl, she said, my mother was not really dating Ed, but she said, my mother was a teacher. She was very intelligent. And she said, Ed really liked her. And she said, now in these days, Ed was working in the sun. He had a good tan. He'd gotten his health back. And she said, you know, he was kind of a muscular little guy there. And she said, my mother was quite attracted to him. And she said, we'd go by the castle and they'd kind of flirt back and forth and talk about schools, you know, because Ed loved children. And she said, when he was giving me a tour of the castle, now the health chair, George, as we were studying this thing, it's not really different than any other chairs, you know. Remember, there's 25 one-ton rocking chairs inside Coral Castle. Sure. They all rock on the center of their gravity. They don't have rocker arms. They're just kind of cut in a concave position. And she said Ed would take her to this chair. She was probably 6-7 years old. And he told her, he said, now sit in this chair here, and you'll have good health forever. Now, she said, I would sit in the chair for a while, and she said, but as a young child, of course, I was restless, and I wanted to play on the other chairs in the castle there. And Ed told other people every now and then that he didn't really put the health chair on his tour. He didn't really include it. The health chair was behind and to the left of the mother-in-law chair. If you remember, that was the one he said he created it to be the most uncomfortable chair in the castle in case his mother-in-law, you know, visited, that she would hate the chair and take the hint and leave.
Well, now, he didn't have a mother-in-law.
Had a mother-in-law. Well, a supposed mother-in-law in the future if she came.
All right, all right.
So the health chair, I would love to find out more about that. We're wondering, George, if it's not at one of those points in the castle there where the energy level would have been on the grid, and maybe it would have been higher, because, you know, they've proven now that they actually have a magnet machine that you can get into that's a pulsating magnetic field that actually repels, you know, arthritis and all these type of things. So the only thing we can figure is that that chair is sitting in a spot on one of those, what we call a sweet spot.
Let me ask you this. Did anybody ever try to duplicate this magnetic machine that he had up there?
Well, over the years, there's several backyard inventors, and I get emails from a lot of guys all the time that are trying, and several people have gotten close, but they've never really, I think there was a company that had to move offshore near one of the, the Canary Islands, because they were kind of harassed out of this country, so they set it up down there, and they are still trying to make models of it. They're the same idea, but it's very difficult, and as far as I know, they do not have an exact working model of his machine, although they're trying.
Well, I'm always wondering if somebody's got the technology somewhere, especially if, like he said, it could propel rockets.
Yeah, and you know, George, when you think about it, with the magnets running the machine, and it's always producing as much as it consumes. In fact, the idea comes like from a battery, because I think water, if you remember, water had to be present. When he found the water there, water sort of acts as a catalyst like a battery does in our car. So this machine is very plausible. And one thing I can't understand, George, is we have something here in our country that there's nothing like it. The man who discovered the secrets of the pyramids, the Mayans, all of these cultures, Stonehenge, not only does he figure that out and proves it, and Ed was not a braggart, he let his stones do the talking, but here is a machine that we should be using, we should be studying, and yet today, from, say, the University of Florida Engineering Department, or I was watching a thing on History Channel where these professors went to Italy studying these different architects, you know, from Syracuse and New York University, and I thought, why aren't these same guys, why don't they come right into our own country here, figure out what Ed's machine was, at least put the students, you know, why not run the students from the University of Florida through these classes, your engineering students, let them study. George, in Florida, 90% of the Florida residents don't know about Coral Castle. If it wasn't for people like you and Coast, I've never been interviewed by a radio station in Florida.
You're kidding me.
No, I don't even, there's only been one magazine article and one newspaper article written in Florida about my work.
Who owns the place now?
The owners of Coral Castle are quite mysterious. It's very difficult. They really don't want to be known. They, from what I understand, they live in Chicago, but I don't know if they're afraid of just, they don't want publicity, or they're quite wealthy. And
do you know who they are?
I really don't. I had tried to find out one time, and I was told not to ask any more questions.
What would the property tax rolls say? They've got to say something.
You could probably find it out from there. It's just that I never pursued the matter because I thought, well, if they want to remain private, you know, who am I to,
You're down that way, though, aren't you?
Pardon me?
Are you down that way?
Well, no, I'm actually 8 hours. I'm an 8-hour drive. I'm almost, that's why I have this swamp accent. I'm almost into Georgia where I live.
We got to turn somebody loose on this to find out what the property tax rolls say. I mean, I'm sure it's probably in a trust or some kind of corporation, and we may never find out who it is. But who knows? Stranger things have happened. I'm really curious to see who owns it and how long have they owned it.
Well, now they've actually, I can give you a little bit of history on that. When Ed died, he had one cousin named Harry Lee Scallon, and he was in Chicago. And he left the castle to Harry, but Harry was sick, so he sold it to a couple in Chicago. They kept it for a couple of years, and then they sold it to the owners that own it now. Okay, now you can check with the state of Florida, the history department there, and they can tell you it's a registered. It's on the National Historical Register, so you can find out from that. Like I said, I got into a little bit of trouble with the owners there, George, if you remember.
What happened?
Well, if you remember in the first book that I sent you.
And you mean the current owners?
Yes, the current owners.
Okay.
My book is not carried in Coral Castle. For anybody who calls, you're not going to find my book in any of the chain stores. You won't find it at Coral Castle. I live in an old Florida cracker house built around 1900, and I've got it stacked to the walls with my book. I'm the only one that carries it. I don't know if I've been blacklisted at the stores or what, but nobody carries my book.
So it's not sanctioned by the Coral Castle people?
No, No,
okay,
I.
Why not?
Well, let me. This is. I want to
give us
to,
the juicy stuff, Joe. What happened?
Okay, I'm going to air my dirty laundry here, George, just for you. Okay, as I was researching this story, and I remember I spent like 10 years just. I wasn't planning on writing a book. I was just taking notes because I was so fascinated. Well, I was down in Honduras because I was looking for the Atlantis connection. I had read a lot of stories about Casey talking about Atlantis existing off the coast of Florida at Bimini, which just fascinates me because they have actually, George, found a pyramid down there that was 400 feet out of the sand. So I'm sitting here going, oh, my God. So I'm down in Honduras. Well, I find this Mayan swastika on a pyramid down there, and it's also in Mexico. It's all over the place. Now, when I say a Mayan swastika, I mean it's not exactly like Hitler's swastika.
Well, and I want everybody to know that prior to the Nazis, the swastika was a pretty commonplace emblem, wasn't it, and logo type.
Yes, thing. Yes, it actually meant, you know, like the sun. You know, it was characterizing the sun.
Right. I mean, it's got bad connotations now, but before the Nazis took it as their slogan, basically,
right?
It was pretty predominantly used.
It was all over the place. Yes, it was
for ages.
Yes, even the Mayans had it. You know, they actually believed that the snake, when he shed his skin, he was being reborn.
Right.
And that's where you find the snake, the serpent, the plumed serpent on a lot of their pyramids. So I find this, and I'm going, oh, my God. Well, all of a sudden, Ted Danson comes out with this television series in a movie called, Back to Atlantis. And he actually shows where Hitler ordered Heinrich Himmler to look for the master race. George, they went into Tibet. They went into Central South America, everywhere looking for the master race. And I'm like, oh, my God, what if, let's just take a wild scenario, and I was looking for a plot to add to the Ed story because, you've got, when you're writing a book, you've got to have some wheels that it can roll on, and I looked at Ed's coming from Latvia, and where does he land? He lands at an area of Florida at the edge of the Everglades. They actually say the tip of the Bermuda Triangle actually goes into that area. So I'm going, oh, my God, we got Atlantis, we got the Bermuda Triangle, we got that city out there. Now, 10,000 years ago, George, which a lot of people don't realize, all that water was dry land.
Exactly.
So the city could have sat right there. So as I'm researching this, I find the swastika, and I think, oh, my God. So I based a lot of this on Casey's writings because he said they misused the crystal powers. They actually had a generating plant, and they had like a laser-type war, like a Star Wars-type war that destroyed it. So I'm sitting here going, what if? And they're doing a lot of studies now, and we talked about, and you talked about a past life in your newsletter there when you wrote an article on my book and our interview. Mm-hmm. I loved how you said, hey, you know, what if if Ed discovered he did have a past life? And they're doing studies now called genetic memories where our DNA could go back all the way. In other words, there could have been an Adolf Hitler 10,000 years ago in Atlantis, and 10,000 years later, he comes back in our era, the same exact guy, maybe different name, but that same DNA is in the blood. So my plot in the book, George, is to go back in Atlantis and see what happened there. And let's just say if those pyramids are that old and the swastikas are there, what if there was a form of Nazis? And what I was trying to show, George, was let's look out, because evil that's in the past always comes back, and it kind of repeats itself like a circulating pattern. So in the book, the reason I put the picture of the Mayan swastika was to show that this culture could have existed 10,000 years ago in this city, okay, could have been someone like Adolf Hitler. And what I was trying to do was warn the world, look out, these things can happen again. And actually in page 254 of the hardback book, I mentioned Ed was not a Nazi. He did not like these things. He was keeping up with it. And you got to remember, George, in this time period that Ed was there was one of the greatest times, and Hitler was a big part of that in the evil that he committed. So I was trying to show in the book, and I actually said, we have to watch out for these cultures. But what happened was when I mailed the book to Coral Castle for them to approve it, the owners were down there for a visit. And the book was on the counter. Well, when you look in the hardback book, on third page, you see the Mayan swastika. Well, the owner picked up the book, was perusing it, saw the Mayan swastika, and went, boom, threw my book in the trash and said,
He went bananas.
He's a communist, and we'll never carry this book in our place.
Okay, without even looking at what it was.
Without reading the book, nothing. And actually, the strange thing is, my friend who actually did the first newspaper review was a Jewish friend of mine, and I ran the store by her, and I said, now, you sure you understand what I'm trying to say? And she said, it's clear as a bell. You know, you have no problem. And I've actually had Jewish friends of mine who wrote me and said, hey, you know, I understand what you were doing, but this is a case, George. I'm not beating anybody up. It's a shame that I've done all this work, and the book is not offered there. And I would do anything to, you know, to sit down with these people and explain to them what I was trying to say, but they will not talk to me. So I just, it's just a lost cause.
All right, so you may not be the one to track them down, but somebody at Coral Castle, is Coral Castle, I've not been there.
It's privately owned.
It's privately owned. You can go see it. You can tour it.
It's a tourist.
How much you pay to go see it now?
Now, it's gone up. It used to be $6. It's about $10 now.
For $10, you go there, and I guess there's staff there.
There's guides. Yeah, there's guides, and they give you about an hour's tour there.
So somebody somewhere is the manager of Coral Castle, if you call down there, right?
Correct. Sylvia is the manager.
All right. If you call Sylvia and say, Sylvia, who owns Coral Castle? What's she going to say?
You will get probably, I'm not allowed to give out that information.
All right. But she does know who it is.
Of course.
So how much money do you think they're making down there now?
Actually, George,
that's not like a lot of people go there all the time.
No, it's not
like Disneyland.
No. In fact, one of the things that's hurt Coral Castle and all those places is Disneyland. You know, everybody wants to run down and see all the whiz and the bang, which is great. And Coral Castle is more of a historical, scientific thing in a way, but it's a lot of fun. You can put your kids in there. And Ed was saying, you know, I don't need hurricane insurance because Hurricane Andrew blew through there and it was still fine. I don't need fire insurance because nothing I have will burn. So kids can come through there, play up. They can't hurt anything. It's an outdoor museum, but only about, I'd say, 10 years ago, there were 75,000 visitors. There's probably a lot more. When we did the Coast Show, they packed that place, and they're still going from that show. But I would say...
So give me an estimate. How many people do you think
I'd
go through there?
I'd say 90,000.
90,000 people a year at $6. So it's generating over $500,000 in gross sales.
Right.
And I don't know what their expenses are, but
it's probably
paying its mortgage.
Oh,
right?
For sure.
At least.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, one sad thing that I want to say is I want to run down there with a can of WD-40 and spray all of Ed's iron tools because, you know, they're not, I mean, I hate to say this, they're just not putting the money in keeping up his tools.
They're not taking care of it, are they?
No.
Maybe I get everybody from coast to coast to pitch in. And
I wish you would come down on June 21st, the summer solstice, and let's have an Ed's Day. I'm working on, you know, we have a new governor here. I didn't have any luck with the last, you know, I was telling people, George, no Florida governor, no senator, no mayor, nobody will step into Coral Castle and say it exists.
Gosh, I saw a picture of the magnetic machine, but you are right. It looks like its parts have been taken out of it.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if you got the latest email I sent you. A wonderful photographer named Robert Wyman took a picture of the actual stone. Did you see that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure did.
The gray matter there, the stone that sits under the 9-ton gate. I couldn't take that good a picture.
Right.
But yeah, George, there's so much that could be done there. And the knowledge that could be gained from this place, it's just being wasted.
Well, we're going to continue talking about some of the magnificent things that Ed had at Coral Castle, but also what I'd like, Joe, next hour when we open up the phone lines, maybe somebody has some inside information on the Coral Castle, like the woman who called you after listening to your appearance on Coast to Coast in 2004. Maybe someone out there has had relatives who know about Coral Castle. Maybe someone out there was told the secret by Ed Leedskalman. We'll be back.
Let's hope so.
And our special guest, of course, Joe Bullard. And we'll be back with Joe in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Joe, our researchers, our listeners, sent me some information on Coral Castle, the taxes. First of all, the taxes in 2006, $27,578. And the owner's name is just listed as Coral Castle, Inc.
Mm-hmm.
So that is that. Now what somebody would have to do is send a letter to the Secretary of State in Florida to get the information on the corporation,
mm-hmm.
or at least find the attorney who's responsible for it, and then you track down the owners. But, you know, if you're paying property taxes of $27,000, that place is worth, you know, $2.5 to $3-4 million.
Oh, yeah, at least.
You know, so that's a pretty good chunk of property. And what is it on? How many acres?
I think the site now has only got like 2 acres. I think it's on 2 acres.
Okay, and I don't think the taxes have been paid yet for 2006.
Okay.
And they have to pay them by May 31st, or then they start paying those penalties and things like that.
Okay.
Interesting, isn't
yeah.
it?
That's, like I said, when I got in trouble, I kind of just laid low, and I really haven't talked about it. This is really the first time because, you know, George, I wouldn't hurt anybody's feelings in this world. And you know, I understand they lost some family members during the Holocaust. And, you know, George, if there was one person out there who thought I was a Nazi, I would destroy my book. I would quit all my research. I wouldn't do anything that was remotely connected to that, and I'm so sad that that's the thought there. But I thank you for letting me clear the air here with the listeners and the anyone who bought that original book. You know, I've never had any other complaints.
Okay, back to Coral Castle, back to Ed Leedskalnin. So he dies. Where does he die? In a hospital? Does
Jackson
he die Memorial, there?
Jackson Memorial Hospital. In 1951, in December of 1951, Ed had not been eating correctly. And, you know, some of the people that told me there, in fact, Mr. Bullard said that he was tired. He had done everything he wanted to do, and he was just basically, to quote Mr. Bullard, he was ready to go. He got on his bicycle, pedaled over to the local bus station, bought a ticket to Jackson Memorial Hospital, checked into the hospital there. And they said that he went into a coma, that as he got there, he was very sick. And the doctors, you know, described his condition as very, very weak. And they said he went into a coma. And they said he kind of came in and out of it. And 3 days later, he died in 1951. And, you know, that's when the period that he was in the hospital, some thieves broke into Coral Castle there and looted it and, you know, destroyed some of the stuff. And like I say, that's when some of the parts of the machine went missing. So we don't know what went on there.
No. When we say thieves, how do we know they weren't people of authority? Here's an example. Nikola Tesla dies, his office gets raided, and all his plans are taken away for free energy or harnessing energy from, you know, the solar system and from space. And so how do we know this didn't happen to Ed?
George, it's almost a no-brainer that it did happen that way. And the best way to cover that is to say, you know, thieves broke in. Well, what were they going to steal? He never didn't have any money there except for what he hid there, and they didn't know about that. So what could they really steal? His crystal radio set? There was really nothing there. So it's almost apparent that it was looted and for a reason.
Yeah. Of everything you've investigated, Joe, I know the book is Waiting for Agnes's fiction based on fact.
Right.
But what has perplexed you the most, fascinated you the most about Leedskalnin or the Coral Castle?
Oh, gosh, George, I could spend 2 hours. There is so many things there that, like the rock telescope and the sundial, and one of the things, I think the thing that gets me the most is here is a man supposedly with no education, fourth grade education, and he wasn't just a Mason, George. He was I think what I love the most is he was a scientist, and he did his own work. He proved his own things. He never wasted anything. For example, when he was digging his first trench to try to get down to the bedrock, he didn't waste the soil, George. He every little piece of gravel and sand, he separated it into different piles for use in something later on. So what gets me about the man is he, just like the Native Americans, when they shot a buffalo, they used his foot, his tail, his tongue. That was the key and the secret to what made Ed different than everybody else, and his eye for detail. George, he loved, and I'm a kid at heart. I'm the same way. We have lizards here in Florida, the little green ones that run around, and I watch them, and spiders. I'm particularly fascinated by spiders, and so was Ed.
You can have them.
Yeah. Well, he used to catch flies and throw them in the webs there down there just to, you know, watch the spiders come in and watch how they – he loved them because they were engineers, you know, if they watched their webs. So he was such a person, and he spent, remember, a lot of time alone. And I guess I'm an only child, so I did a lot of the same things he did. I had to entertain myself, and I found so much that I related to him. Of course, I mean, I don't have the brain that he had, but his knowledge and his – ability to decode things, I think, is what people have no concept. And the thing was, George, he never bragged. He never said, you know, look at all these things I've done. And, George, you could write a 1,000-page volume on the delicate interest. Well, I'll give you an example. He took his watch in to be cleaned one time, and the watchmaker down there said when he took the watch apart, the spring had actually broken there, and Ed had heated the ends of it and connected it back inside the watch exactly. The only thing kept it from running was cleaning it. The watchmaker said only a few watchmakers in the world would have had the finesse to do that. So the man can cut stone and yet fix a watch.
A minute little thing.
A minute thing. And he was an artist. He was a sculptor. He was a scientist, much in the form of Da Vinci and all the great inventors. And I think the thing that captivates me also, George, is that here we have this amazing man. Like we talked about last time, Einstein was genius, but he never lifted 30-ton stones. Why has the man been forgotten? And that still bothers me to this day, and I think it's what drives me, George. And one thing I'll mention about Agnes and the reason I think she existed, from what I can understand, her mother was very opposed to the marriage because she didn't feel that Ed was of the highest quality. And if you remember, Ed described Agnes as being well-bred,
right,
which means she came from a better family.
Some kind of royalty, maybe, of Latvia at the time?
Exactly. I think so. And I think that this drove Ed. You know, if you look at all the geniuses, they said one thing that fascinated Einstein, one thing that they said, well, what was the one thing that clicked in his mind that made him go into all these different theories? And they said, one simple thing, the compass.
The compass.
And they said, why? And he said, here's a force that moves a needle that I don't understand. Okay, so that drove him. So what drove Ed, I think, to succeed more than anything else? And they said when he got done at Coral Castle, one of the things he did was he would tell people on the tour, now look, don't ask a lot of questions until I get through with the tour because I want to be able to finish the tour. But when he got done, he would stand on a stone platform and just beam and grin like, you know, look at this that I've done. And he would say, now you can ask any questions you want, do anything you want to do, the place is yours. He was so proud of it, George. And I think he was finally standing on that platform saying, okay, Agnes's mother, look what you threw away.
What did the inside of his living quarters at Coral Castle look like?
Oh, this is great. And he would never allow anyone into his quarters. Okay, that was very private, and he would not allow it. And a lot of words were, well, is he storing his treasure map in there? You know, what is this guy doing? Why? Well, he gives a tour, but he won't let us go in to see what his living quarters were like. Well, when you walk in his living quarters, George, remember now, in the time he had tuberculosis, he actually took his bed. Now, he took a couple of 2x4s, or I guess I should say 4x4s. He covered them in burlap bags, strung them together, nailed them together there, and then he hung the whole thing from chains from the ceiling. Now, there was two purposes of this. He would sleep at an angle so that fluid would not build up in his lungs, okay? And also, later on, when someone asked him about it, he said, you know, I'm a bachelor, so I have to do all the cooking and cleaning. And he said, so I don't want to sweep under my bed, so I keep it suspended from chains in the daytime to sweep under it. Now, inside here, you've got to remember, now, this is rough coral stone in there, okay, that's been smoothed into blocks. Okay, now, he went to the junkyard. Remember, all his tools came from there. Well, he took the bumpers off of cars, and I still don't know how he did this. But when you look in the corner there, You know how people build little corner racks there? Well, his corner racks consisted of car bumpers that are inserted into the walls. He would actually climb up on the walls there, and he had jars of string beans and potatoes and all the stuff from his garden in the mason jars that he didn't have in the refrigerator down there. When he was ready to eat, he would have all these on his walls. Okay. Then he had a little two-burner stove in there, a little kerosene stove. Now, above the stove, here's one of the most fascinating things at Coral Castle, and this is what I love about his genius. Now, remember in Latvia, they didn't have the bugs. George, we've got cockroaches down here in Florida that fly. I mean, they look like, you know, 747s.
Gosh.
Ed was not prepared for all these bugs. And in the old days, they had what they called a pie safe. And you put your food in this pie safe, but the bugs would still get in it. So Ed's solution to the bugs, he puts an iron cable up in the ceiling, and he builds his pie safe suspended in the air. Now, on this cable, about midway, he puts a funnel, and he attaches the funnel to the wire, and then he puts tar around the bottom of the funnel and fills it with kerosene. So here's the funnel in the middle of the wire. So a bug would have to crawl down the wire, and as he's trying to get to Ed's food, he drowns in the kerosene.
Brilliant.
So this was Ed's way of handling the bugs.
That was his own insect catcher.
His own insect, his own, I can't think of the name of the plant that catches the bugs,
Venus flytrap.
Venus flytrap, thank you. And now his room, when you go up in there, we're only talking, George, about, I would say, it's probably 10 feet wide by, 8 feet long, 8 by 10, 10 by 10, something like that. Very, very Spartan. Had his food box there, his bed. Oh, he also had a chair that he made out of horsehair and covered it in a fabric, and then he hung the chair from chains so he could sit and read at night. So his chair was suspended also in the air. So when you walk in there, everything is suspended by chains that can be.
It is absolutely incredible at how this is done. Now, are there any structures like this any place on the planet?
There is nothing even remotely resembling it. Nothing.
So this could be another one of the wonders of the world, basically.
Many people, they tried to get it on the register as the 8th wonder of the world, but it never got off the ground. You know, they couldn't get the interest in it. And, George, I think here's one of the examples of what's happened there. Ed's place has been relegated to a circus, if you will, something, a sideshow, a freak sideshow. Instead of being scientifically, and George, I went to the mainstream bookstores one time. They invited me to do a book signing. George, I'm not kidding you. I'm sitting there at one of the major chains. I don't want to mention who. The people who were coming in, they would walk over to my table, and they would say, what is this place? Tell me about Coral Castle. Well, as I would launch into my little spiel about him discovering, and the things that we're discussing right now, George, 7 out of 10 people would walk away. They would not, they thought I was lying. They thought I had made the story up.
Or they didn't have any interest?
Oh, both.
What do you think?
Yeah. Could be. I think the shock on their face was, I think they thought I was really not telling the truth. In fact, Coral Castle had such trouble convincing people that Ed worked alone. They went back to people like Orville Irving and all the people who knew Ed in the early stages. There's actually a book down there where they signed and notarized that we watched him, we saw him, he worked alone.
Even if he had 20 guys working with him,
yeah.
they couldn't do what he did.
That's correct. But people, you see, they just, and another thing, they drive by the sign down there. There's not a really nice sign. They're headed to the Keys. They're in a hurry. They look over there, and they see 8-foot-high gray walls. That's all you see because you can't see inside the castle, really. You can see the crescent moon. That's the only visible signpost there. So they think, oh, this is just a tourist trap. And Ed said, here's the ironic thing, George, when he's building Coral Castle, there were so many tourist traps down there, alligator farms, and, you know, people, breathing fire. You know how Florida is. We were trying to sell everything, and Ed said, I'm going to build a place that's not a tourist trap. And ironically, fate has it that he's cast into the light as just a circus guy.
Well, let's go back to the machine for a moment. What is there anything on record again that Ed has been quoted as saying about that machine?
Not really. Not really. I can't find anything. The only thing, and I'm not sure where B.J. Cathy got the quote, but I saw an interview by him not long ago, and he made the statement, Ed said he had the secrets of anti-gravity. I never found that in any of my research anywhere, but I'm not saying he didn't say it because, you know, B.J. Cathy's been studying this a lot longer than I have. In fact, there's many people that have, but he's one of the few, and I take him at his word.
What does B.J. say about the machine?
He believes that and along with the Christopher Dunn theory, that there was a cable that ran from the machine out to the actual stones, and that Ed was taking that tripod, wrapping a chain around the actual end of the stone, lifting it a little bit until he got this cable around it. Then he would crank the handle on his machine, and what it was doing, George, and we talked about this last time. One thing they don't understand at Coral Castle, there is a black box that sits on top of the tripod. The stone is underneath. Now, this steel cable runs from the black box, we'll call it, all the way down, and you can see it might be wrapping around the stone, but you can't really see it in the photograph. So Christopher Dunn's idea is that Ed was actually flipping the magnetic pole of the stone by his magnetic machine. And the way this would work is the energy, the frequency would come out of his machine, it would travel up the iron rod, or the iron cable, if you will. It would go up to that box, and he believes, and there are tuners that Ed left behind in the castle, and Christopher Dunn believes that those tuners in the box change the frequency, and it goes down to the actual stone and changes the polarity of that area.
Because, you know, the tripod may be able to help the blocks vertically, but it doesn't explain the mass movement horizontally of these blocks and how he got them all over the place.
That is absolutely right. And I had a guy, you know, I get all these great theories, and I don't know if this might make more sense to you, but a guy emailed me, and he said, what if there's a way to have like a 3D magnet power, if you will, go out to the sides there and form some kind of other magnetic, you know, if you can flip the poles north and south, let's try to flip them, or what can we do east and west? And this was his theory, that is there some type of magnetism that we can go side to side?
He has a message over the door of his bedroom. Tell me about it.
That is something that I have asked people over the last 20 years. There is a number that's up over that doorway there, and the number they're saying he said it says the secret to the universe, and he gives this number, and it's something that a lot of people have tried to decode over the years, and I've never found really an answer that explains what this code means. But one of the numbers in the code, George, is 51. And in my research, and if you look, that is the angle that the Great Pyramid is formed on. It's also the angle of one of the shadows that's at Stonehenge. So I'm wondering if this...
It's also the year he died.
That's all right. It's the year he died. Good point. I hadn't thought about that. Ooh, it gives me chill bumps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that number, we're trying to figure out, it has to be, we think, some type of astrological symbol or sign. But at this point, it's unknown. If there's anyone out there who can decipher this number, they will win the ultimate prize.
Because it said, the secret of the universe is
right.
7129/61051 95. Somebody's got to have a computer that can figure this one out. We'll be back in a moment with Joe Bullard. We'll take your questions. And if any of you have had relatives who might have known Ed Leedskalden, you can check in with us too.